Hi, I'm Maria Zylstra, joined this week by Dr. Jun Ohashi, a lecturer and researcher at the ASIA Institute at the University of Melbourne, who's working on bridging the gulf between local and international students, an issue identified by the Australian University's Quality Agency as of concern there, by using language learning, Japanese language learning, in a way that promotes intercultural self-development. And the principles underlying this way of language teaching have sprung actually out of his own experiences, haven't they, Jun, since you were yourself an international student from Japan in the UK, and that's a good couple of decades ago now.
Exactly, yes.
But that was a good experience.
Yes, very much indeed.
You went straight from Japan to the UK, somewhere up in the north.
That's right, yeah, a place called Dundee, and then I moved to Stirling, yes. And my sort of first cultural encounter in Scotland is in the lift.
In the lift?
Yes.
An elevator?
That's right, yes.
And what happened?
You know, people standing very close to the operation button. Look around and smile and ask, you know, which floor you would like to go. And we all exchange, you know, eye contacts. So I thought that it was very, very friendly.
And you felt comfortable with that?
Yeah, I was. Yes, yes, yeah. But actually move on to my very different experience when I moved to Melbourne in 1996. In the lift at the department store, it was very crowded, but there was no obvious eye contact. And a person who was sitting very close to the operation button made no effort to probably asking which floor you're going. And also other users try their best to try to reach out the operation buttons from the behind, saying, excuse me, excuse me.
In that second lift then, it was much more each for his own. It was much more formal. People had their barriers up and they weren't allowed to touch each other. They weren't allowed to speak to each other. They weren't allowed to look at each other or allow for each other's needs. You maybe made room for someone else to do what they wanted to for themselves.
That's right.
But that was it.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, there is a high degree of politeness. They probably care for each other's space. But I felt that that probably sum up the current situation of, you know, many people coexist, but they somehow don't make much use of this opportunity of learning from each other, intercultural learning.
Well, at the institution where you now teach, the University of Melbourne, almost a third of all the enrolments are international students.
Yes, that's right. To be more specific, the 28% of the enrolment is.
Yeah. And the educative model that is followed requires Melbourne Uni students to take a quarter of their academic load outside of the area that they're enrolled in. And many of them pick up languages, with Japanese being rather popular.
Yes.
And that, as you've put it, creates a space where international and local students can actually meet on a large scale.
That's right.
And that's where you're focusing your efforts, right?
Yes, it's the one of the thing that this is something I can do within my speciality. The Japanese language is the common foreign language for both local and international students. So usually speaking the common foreign languages has got a emancipatory power.
So much more equal.
Much more equal, where genuine cultural exchange can occur.
Yeah. Well, you've pointed out too that there's something special about language learning that can have a potent effect on the learner's sense of self. Mm-hmm. And you actually design your teaching to promote that, don't you?
Yes, that's right.
Can you explain how that works?
Yes. Since 1996, I came across a very significant divide in terms of the sitting arrangement in the classroom. There is a obvious distinction between the place where an international student tend to sit and local student tend to sit. And in the sort of middle, Australian-born Asian student tend to sit.
Mm.
So it's a clear division in the classroom.
They don't mingle. It's like flocks of sheep, not, like with like.
Yeah, not as much as I wish. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I've been thinking many, many years, is there anything I can do with it? And I tend to see that the multicultural diverse setting is a fantastic opportunity, but the student didn't actually make the most of it. So it's a pity. Then what I implemented from this year is to give them a project, which is I called Cultural Discovery Project. And we get them team up. So a student has to look for a partner from a different cultural background. From week two, they did presentations and also they did a project work together.
And they continue to work together. They
keep working together.
Right.
So that actually obviously a sudden immediate effect in terms of the seating arrangement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that mucks that up rather well, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah. But I have to make a genuine reason for the pair work from the different cultural backgrounds. So they must have information gap.
Mm-hmm. You also devise some teaching methods to enable intercultural, cross-cultural communication. One of these is what you call natural conversation reconstruction tasks.
Yes, yes.
Can you explain what they are?
Yes. Rather than giving a student the prefabricated and natural conversations, I decided natural artifact, which is a conversation, naturally occurring conversations, extract. Then,
Sorry, just to clarify. Yeah. So these are recordings of actual conversations.
That's right.
And then, I transcribed.
Transcribed, uh-huh. Yes, yes. Yep. And then we all give the student the very, very specific information, the age of the conversationalists, gender, when the conversation occurred, everything. So rich contextual information. Then I show to the students the exact transcriptions, and one conversation turn has been taken out for the student to guess what this person would say in this blackheads.
So they have to fill in the missing details.
That's right. And then have to consider the age of the interlocutor, age of the conversationalist, gender, and also look into speech act. Is it thanking or apologizing or requesting, paying a compliment? Student has to think about first in their first language. And also, at the same time, they have to consider the second language norm, which is Japanese norm. What would the Japanese people would say? Yeah.
So what you're asking the students to do in that circumstance or with this task is to kind of, in a way, play act someone else. It's almost role-playing, isn't it? You're putting yourself in that position that person. It's not just the words.
Mm. That's right.
It's actually a whole cultural context, but also another persona.
That's right, yeah. And if you listen to what the student talk about while doing this task, they tend to say that I would say in this in English, but probably in Japanese, there is a hierarchical issues and politeness and so on. They have to go through, you know, back and forth their first culture, first language, and also the second language, the Japanese language.
Mm.
So it's a very, very good exercise, eye-opening for them.
Well, it gets them thinking about other possibilities.
That's right.
Other than the one that's inside their own skin.
That's right, yeah. And then also question, why Japanese people apologize here? But in English, we say thank you. And then I can invite them to the world of cultural understanding of Japanese culture, which is a debt-credit balancing game is going on underneath balance sheet of debt and credit.
So in so doing, then you're creating a sensitivity for those
different
kinds of cultural
that's
norms,
right.
different
yes.
ways of being.
That's right.
And creating empathy.
Exactly. And also the student can question why we don't say in English. And then in the end, they question who I am, where I'm from. And that kind of, you know, the cultivation of humanistic aspects of their potential ability can be fostered through second language acquisition.
Something that would be pretty important on your campus too, with such a high proportion of international students.
That's right, yes.
Because I think that that's been an issue that has been of some concern, that there is little or not enough at any rate communication between the different groups, the local and the international
well,
students.
Well, universities have been trying very, very hard to challenge our social categorization practice, which is international or local or Asians and so on, to find some solutions.
So are there alternative terms or we just drop them?
Well, what we are going to do, perhaps I would like to do, is to challenge the social categorization, let's say international student, by looking into diversity. They're so diverse. And local student, there are so diverse groups. And also those who have transnational identities, so we should learn from them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Jun Ohashi is a lecturer and researcher at the Asia Institute at the University of Melbourne, and an opportunity to learn interculturality from them is available at a symposium that'll take place on Friday, July the 20th, at the Asia Institute at the University of Melbourne, and called First Generation of Multicultural Australians and International Students, Key Driving Forces of Challenging Social Categorisations. To look at the program schedule and sign up to attend, check today's program page on the Lingua Franca website and make the link. There's also a blog on that site with lots of fascinating and insightful entries to read. Next week on Lingua Franca, do join me, Maria Zylstra, for another on the fantastic uses that language learning can have, and find out about the benefits of pairing senior secondary students doing languages in years 11 and 12 with elderly citizens who have those languages as their mother tongues. Or maybe it's not so surprising for you, the richness that connecting through language gives. Till then,